It's 25 days to the presidential and parliamentary elections. This is Joy News Today. My name is Emefa Akosia Adeti, and our headlines today. Supreme Court rules Speaker's declaration of 4 seats vacant is unconstitutional. EC disqualifies GFP's replacement flag bearer over alleged document irregularities. Would also hit the campaign trails for updates because it is your election headquarters. We've got these plus business news, sports news and world news in this package. Please stay for details. Welcome back. And in our first story, the Supreme Court has, by a 5-2 decision, ruled that the Speaker Alban Bagbin's declaration of 4 seats as vacant is unconstitutional. At a brief sitting earlier today, Chief Justice Gertrude Torkornoo said the Speaker's declaration cannot hold. According to her, the reasons for the verdict will be provided on Wednesday, November 13, 2024. We've been speaking to NPP MP for Tafo, Eko Asifwa, and the NDC's MP for South Dying Roxanne Nelson Dafiamekpo.
So I was making a point that the judgment in court today is exclusive of a trigger to convene parliament. A trigger in parliament, or if you like, a trigger to reconvene parliament, comes by two ways. And that is based on the standing orders of parliament that emanate from the Constitution of the Republic of Ghana. The Speaker of Parliament, so much, that is, without any application or petition or whatsoever, that comes to him, can say that due to public interest, I am calling Parliament based on these reasons. Secondly, a petition from members of Parliament, that is about 15%, can also trigger to reconvene Parliament. So what that means is that at this point in time, I think that the majority side is about having a meeting. Then we will decide as to whether or not, which I think that is going to be in the affirmative, to trigger Speaker of Parliament, or if you like, to petition Speaker of Parliament to recall Parliament so that the urgent businesses that we are supposed to deal with can be dealt with. Because you see, the judgment that comes today clearly indicates that the MPP is still the majority in Parliament. So I do not expect that any time that Parliament reconvenes, you will have the minority going to sit at where the majority normally sit.
I am sad by the decision of the court. I think the court fell into an error of some law. What is the evidence for the court? Is the court saying that Cynthia Morrison is not running as an independent candidate in Aguna West, even though she's presently the MPP-sponsored member of parliament for Aguna West? Is the evidence before the court that the independent member for Kobina now is the sponsored by the NDP under their symbol and colors for Kobina? Is the court saying that the evidence that Kojua Samoa, by Kojua Santé, who is the NDP sponsored member of parliament for Sugu, is now an independent candidate? So unless I see the reason, I don't know what the court is saying. In any case, a decision has to be taken by Parliament to give effect to this ruling.
Lawyer Kuku Painstall has also been reacting to this ruling.
I mean, the long and short, let me put it this way.
Does the Supreme Court lack jurisdiction?
Arguments on and on, and the whole thing becomes an academic exercise. The short of the matter is that whatever reason that the minority, which are the two judges, have for taking the position they have taken, the position is clear now that the four MPs who were removed by the fiat or the order or the ruling of the Speaker are entitled to return to Parliament. Obviously, I mean, the issue as to whether even the Supreme Court is a proper forum and so forth and so on is very moot. It's only useful as an academic exercise, at least for now. Because when the same Supreme Court has taken the decision by the majority, that will mean until possibly some future date that the Supreme Court may wish to reverse itself on that finding that they made. So what is of practical importance is the fact that, the Supreme Court has ruled in the majority and the two have dissociated themselves. But like I'm saying, because the actual reasons that they gave are not available to us, it would appear to me that what the minority decided was more about procedure, which is of course also part of the processes of the Supreme Court.
This is your election headquarters. Let's bring you some election-related stories. Now, first, the Electoral Commission has disqualified Philip Appiah-Kubi, the replacement for Akuadon, called Ghana's Freedom Party, due to errors and alleged irregularities discovered in his nomination documents. EC Chair Jean Mensah, who made this announcement, emphasized that the disqualification followed a careful review of the party's submission. The EC has also confirmed that the initial ballot order for the 2024 presidential election will remain unchanged.
Of the Ghana Freedom Party. He and the party went on to submit their nomination forms on the 5th of November, and our technical teams went to work immediately reviewing the nomination forms. At the end of the process, they detected a number of errors and some illegalities with the form. The candidate's attention was drawn to these errors, and the party was provided an opportunity to correct them. They did that. In the view of the commission, it was not in our bosom to provide the political party the opportunity to correct some of the illegalities that we found on the form. In that respect, the party did not draw attention to it, because the commission does not feel that it is in its bosom to allow any political party to correct illegalities with the form. The commission, therefore, as at yesterday, wrote to the party and to the candidate disqualifying him from contesting the 2024 presidential election. This morning, we are here to inform you of the commission's decision to maintain the presidential ballot as it is. As you may be aware, and I believe all of you have representatives in the printing houses, we are almost 90% complete with the printing of presidential ballots. And you are also aware that following the passing of Madam Akuadonkor, we requested the printing houses to cease printing until, the law had taken its course. Now that the presidential candidate, the nominee, has been disqualified, the commission would like to inform you that the printing would proceed on the current ballot as is, in the interest of time and to save this country millions of cedis. And so our task here this morning is very simple. We are not here to change positions. We are not here to re-ballot. We are simply here to inform you that the commission intends to notify our printing houses to proceed with the presidential ballot as is. It will proceed with the ballot that bears the name and the image of the name of the Ghana Freedom Party, their symbol, and the image of Madam Akuadonkor. And we believe that a lot of discussions and advertisements will go out to prevent the citizenry from voting for her.
Now let's speak to Michael Ashale, who covered this event for us. Michael, good afternoon. So tell us, how has the parties who were present today been reacting to this news?
Well, let me start. So what we understand the rationale behind the disqualification is that the party was given some time to present documentation for the proper replacement of the late Ikeadonko to lead the party into the general elections. However, upon the scrutiny of the documents that he had brought, which was represented, Philip was going to represent Ikeadonko. Essentially, the EC says that they realized there were some errors and illegalities and not irregularities that they had seen in the documentation. They could allow for them to make corrections to the errors, but not the illegality. So they took the decision to disqualify the party ahead of the general elections. However, the status quo will remain when it comes to the ballot paper in itself. You see Ikeadonko and the GFP on it. However, those votes will not be counted. They will be seen or recognized as rejected ballots during the election. The EC said that they will also go ahead and sensitize individuals not to vote for the party. And this really is because they have printed almost 90% already of the ballot papers. They wanted it, but because of the COVID situation, they have taken a decision to also continue the printing. So there will not be a change in the ballot or the positions of any political party. GFP remains qualified, but 12 candidates will be on the ballot paper on December 7th.
Michael, so for the political parties that were present, have they shared any form of consent at all? Are they clear in their minds that this decision by the EC does not affect them in any way? Hi, Michael.
Yeah, I don't know if I can hear you.
Perfect. So I'd like to find out whether the political parties that were present today, be the NDC, the NPP, and the other parties, whether they shared any concern at all, or if they have any form of reservations at all as to the decision of the commission.
Well, we heard from the NDC and some other political parties that were present at this IPAC meeting. At least from the side of the NDC and these political parties, they are okay with the decision. They think that over the years, that has been the status quo, and it's okay for the EC to go ahead with. However, on the side of the NDC, what we know is that the last meeting, they refused to take the final vote at first. But this time around, they have seen in the financial because the EC has not given them a breakdown of the voter statistics, and they are satisfied. They said, I don't think they use the document, the final voting register, and the statistics have been given to them by the EC, and in due course, inform the public what their findings are.
Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you. Now, we've also been joined by Dr. Kwame Asasante. He's a political scientist from the University of Ghana. Good afternoon, Doug. And let us understand if this in any way affects the electoral temperature of the country so far. Hello, Doug, if you can hear me.
Yeah, can you hear me, please?
Yes, we can. Thank you for joining us.
I'm saying that nothing would change that much. The status quo will virtually remain, and that we are going to have, this is not going to affect voter choices in any way. What is going to happen, in effect, is that those who have, prepared their minds to vote for Madame Ikeadonko's party will now have to make a choice as to who to give their vote to. If they believe strongly that their party is the one that they vote for all the time, and that they don't want to change anything, then obviously they are going to abstain from the election, right? The little challenge we are going to have is that I heard the EC boss saying that, yes, advert is going to go out to inform people so that they do not vote towards that party direction. Yes, in spite of the adverts, we are still going to have some people who continue to vote. That is a fact. But that will come to add to the number of spoiled ballots and the rest of them. Already, the problem of spoiled ballot is huge. So if this one also comes to add to it, who knows? It could also have consequences on the fortunes of the election somehow. somehow, if the number is huge, extremely huge, and this one add to that. And then you have smaller parties coming to also perform and perform well. Then we are likely to see some changes. But let's wait and see.
Doc, so I'm curious though, I would have thought that because this candidate is a vice presidential candidate for this party, the information that were already provided would have been rolled over. I know that this is more of a concern for the EC. They have said that they are not going to discuss the legalities of this matter. But let me in. I'm quite curious about how a person is disqualified now. Does this mean that the information that he provided would have been far different from what he provided at the time that the candidate who had passed was alive?
I think I did hear the EC boasting that there were certain irregularities in terms of, you know, mistakes that are on the form. But beyond that, there were legal, you know, problems associated with the form. That is the crux of the matter.
Okay.
What legal breaches did they commit? And if there were any, what would be the remedy for the situation? And that is a function of law. So I believe that the law will take its course from there.
Thank
Once,
you, sir.
You are legally thrown out. It doesn't change the political temperature. That didn't affect the political temperature in any form at all.
Okay.
You are legally disqualified. And
thank you so much, Doug. Now, let's take you to Parliament, where Anat Dumpre, the majority whip, is reacting to the Supreme Court ruling now.
Future Parliament, we'll still make very good reference to this ruling because it's so, so important. Again, we also see it as a definition of true separation of powers, where you know, as I do know, that the three arms of government have some limitations in terms of the exercise of powers and responsibilities. And all these are defined in our laws. So we think it's a day of victory, and I hear people say, what do you expect? Are they going to comply or not? There can't be an option of not respecting the judgment of the Apex Court of our land. We don't consider it as an option for any body, individual or corporate entity, to arrogate to itself powers to say that they will not respect a court judgment. That would be strange. We don't expect the minority to do that. We don't expect the speaker to do that. Don't forget, we are seeking to govern this country. And it will be strange to hear that they will say that we will not respect a court judgment. That can never be an option. So these are our comments. We want to commend our colleagues and also commend the Ghanaian people who have been very patient waiting for this judgment. And we are proud that we took this matter to court, led by our leader, our respected leader. We are also proud that there was a prompt response to what we sought from the Apex Court. So without much ado, we want to thank you very much. Let's all be careful in our reportage. I think it's a solemn moment for us as a country, and this is very typical of the New Patriotic Party. A number of landmark cases that we've taken to courts and we've had court pronouncements. We've not won all of them, but they've sought to define in terms of interpretation of our constitution. So we thank everybody, the Ghanaian people, for the patience, and once again also proving that we are a civil and law-abiding political party, and we resort to civility other than violence. So once again, I thank you for this opportunity, and maybe let me hear your questions. Don't forget, you don't have to be repetitive. The leader has spoken.
Well, Anna Dompre, Majority Whip, right there, reacting to the Supreme Court ruling. We'll bring you details of that ruling subsequently in our bulletin. But away from that, the black market sale of kidneys booms with one kidney going for as much as 4 million cedis. That's according to the president of Renal Patients Association, Abafor Kojo Ahinkra. The story is not entirely different from 13-year-old Rosemary Boydu looking urgently for $25,000 for a kidney transplant. She was diagnosed with end-stage kidney failure at the time when most children are fulfilling with their dreams and aspirations. Here are excerpts of Joy News' feature, Dialysis at 13, produced by Emmanuel Chivenu.
I just see myself how I am. I look at them. Is someone suffering from what I'm doing before I go there? So I don't like going closer to people.
Her dream of becoming a doctor has been overshadowed by the harsh reality of her present. The constant worry of finding funds for treatment and the fear of death always heavily on her young shoulders.
I want to be a doctor in the future, but sometimes I think maybe that future will not come true because of the condition I am in today.
Kidney transplant is often the preferred long-term treatment option. Transplant may offer the possibility of restoring kidney function and improving quality of life compared to ongoing dialysis. Unfortunately, Rosemary and her mother have been pushed to the very edge of society. To even afford one square meal a day is a luxury, let alone afford to foot for a transplant. But they remain hopeful in the face of adversity.
I'm okay, transplant.
I need help for something because I don't like to be on dialysis for the rest of my life. And this situation too, it's not that being on the dialysis will help the kidney to get kicked and less transplant. So I'm pleading with people to help me to do transplant. My mother cannot afford that money. My father cannot. Family members alone to come out to not afford. So I'm helping with, I'm pleading with everybody to help me to do transplant and stop dialysis.
The Oko machine or no, na in Koromo was on or Mudos or Sofa, Nancy say a cat or no Kuan.
I hear that someone on the list is and I ask myself, so will I also die?
Manuel Givenus report for Joy News.
Well, rather sad story that gets all of us gutted, but there's good news. Chief Executive of Engineers and Planners and Jatta Cement Mahama has paid the full $25,000 needed for a kidney transplant to save the life of 13-year-old Rosemary Boydu. Now, it's exactly 4 years since the passing of the former President Jerry John Rawlings. His party, the National Democratic Congress, has marked the day with a commemoration at the party's headquarters at Adabraka. Collins Frimpong is joining us with updates. Good afternoon, Collins, and if you can hear me, what can you report? Collins, if you can hear me, what can you report? Collins, hopefully you can hear me. Kindly unmute.
Hello, Mr. Kanigan.
Perfect. Please tell us what you can report.
Right. So the commemoration began at exactly 9:58 a.m. In Nada to observe a 2-minute silence for late president or former president Jerry John Rawlings. So the program in Accra was held at the headquarters of the new National Democratic Congress, NDC, and some of the party leaders were present, led by the Deputy General Secretary, Barbara Asamoah, and also Vice Chair of the NDC, as well as the Member of Parliament for Kwimpu constituency, Kofi Adams, but former President and also Presidential candidate for the NDC, John Dramani Mahama, as well as the National Chairman of the party, Stephen Ketia, and Tito Boti, the General Secretary of the party, were not present because of the various campaign polls that they are all having. But they also observed 2 minutes silence as their various campaign trails that they were at exactly 10 a.m. So after that 2 minutes silence, there was also a floral shoot tribute for Jerry John Rawlings, where it started with Barbara Asamoah, who is the Deputy General Secretary of the party, who placed flowers on the pictures of Jerry John Rawlings. Then we had Vice Chair of the NDC, Kofi Atto, who also did the same, as well as that of Senator Rawlings, who came in to place a flower on his father's pictures, or beside his father's pictures. Afterwards, a series of speeches were delivered. Kofi Adams, who is the Member of Parliament of Queen's constituency, as I stated earlier, delivered a speech, as well as the Vice Chair of the party. Senator Rawlings also delivered a speech. For Kofi Adams, he made mention of the fact that the party needs to revisit the June 4 tenet that was instilled in the party in order to bring development to the people. We also advise the people to go with them, not to be selfish, as Jerry John Rawlings was when he was alive and as he instilled in them. Senator Rawlings also spoke and delivered a speech on behalf of his brother and also the entire family. And he urged the party going to the 2024 election not to only focus on winning the election, but also look at the moral aspect, doing the things right to re-establish confidence in the people, the youth of the people for sustainable future. And also speaking as an ardent, you know, Jerry John Rawlings was an ardent environmentalist. So Senator Rawlings had to group that in, where she urged the party to promote sustainable environment. When they win power, they should make sure that we protect our environment and also fight against illegal mining.
Thank you so much, Collins. We also commemorate with the family of the late president. May he continue to rest in peace. Now, moving away from that story, the Ghana Catholic Bishops Conference is pushing for the collective adoption of strategic plans to pressure the next government to stop Galamsey. Bishop of the Obuasi Diocese, Most Reverend John Iyao Afokwa, who is rallying the support of his colleagues, believes halting illegal mining should be followed by a comprehensive plan to reverse the deterioration. This follows the threat of Galamsey to lives of people in the Adansi enclave due to the deterioration of the environment. And Nanaya Ojima was at the GCBC Annual Plenary Assembly in Obuasi and has filed this report.
Illegal mining continues to wreak havoc in the country's forest reserves and water bodies. Before the opening of the Catholic Bishops Conference hosted in Obuasi, some of the bishops took a trip to the polluted Jimi River, which serves the water needs of parts of the town. Due to the unbearable cost of treatment of the river, AngloGold Ashanti, who bears the cost, has resorted to the drilling of boreholes for their quarters, depriving some communities of access to potable water. Most Reverend John Yao Afuakwa wants the conference to take action to halt the menace.
However, I would urge the conference to map out concrete strategic plans, in some sense to put pressure on the incoming government, if possible to end Galamsey come January 7, 2025, when they assume office and initiate measures and policies to reclaim these lands.
According to the Obuasi Catholic Diocese, lives in some communities in its catchment continue to deteriorate due to the menace. President of the Bishops' Conference, Most Reverend Matthew Kwesi Jemfi, says the issue of illegal mining will be central in their plenary.
All the bishops here paid pastoral visits to many parishes and communities in the diocese. We interacted with the faithful, with the people. We listened. We heard their concerns, especially about this menace and how helpless they are. Their concerns and those of the people of Ghana will certainly come to bear on our deliberations this week. There must be a way out. We must stop this dangerous behavior.
Now, about 70 second cycle schools and students across the country have been awarded exhibiting innovativeness and successfully undertaking sustainable agriculture projects. Cosmos Innovation Center championed the 2024 School Farm Competition under the theme Unveiling the Next Generation of Agricultural Leaders to celebrate youth leadership in sustainable agriculture. After a vigorous process of creativity and entrepreneurship in agriculture, Tamale Girls Senior High School emerged overall best SHS and Okanta Presbyterian Basic School at the best junior high school. Here is a report by Clinton Yeboa.
In an exciting moment, young talents and schools converged at the KNUST for the 2024 edition of the School Farm Awards Ceremony, organized by Cosmos Innovation Center in partnership with MasterCard Foundation. Through four monitoring stages, 400 active schools battled to keep the agricultural project enduring for the ultimate prize. The competition aimed to inspire a generation equipped to advance Ghana's agricultural sector through innovation and resilience. Executive Director of Cosmos Innovation Center, Benjamin John Kessie, says the 2024 KIC School Farm Awards is an inspiring testament to the potential of Ghana's youth and the power of agriculture as a force for innovation and opportunity.
By fostering an early interest in agriculture among junior high and senior high students, we are empowering the next generation to see the sector as a dynamic field where they can make a difference through this program. Students are gaining essential skills in science, technology, and practical farming. But they are also learning invaluable lessons on teamwork, leadership, problem solving, skills that would serve them well in any path that they choose.
This year, Cosmos Innovation Center took over the program from Blue Skies Foundation, awarding winners of the competition with prizes ranging from trophies, cash prizes, plaques, sprinklers, certificates, tablets, computers, and farm equipment. Vice President of Ghana Society of Agribusiness Scientists, Professor James Osei Mensah, says it is important to assist young people identify viable opportunities in agriculture and agribusinesses.
KIC and its partners continue to play a significant role in the training and the equipment of the next generation of agribusiness entrepreneurs. The School Farm Competition, as you and I know, seeks to create a change in the mindset about seeing agriculture as a form, not as a form of punishment, but as a viable economic alternative.
Programs manager at KIC, Terence Tiena, disclosed that this year's edition scaled up because of the successes accrued from previous editions.
We had to scale up twice the initial number and also ensure that we have more girls' schools participating in this program and also building an interest among special schools to take advantage of this initiative. We also place high emphasis on youth leadership. So we want children to take the lead so they own the farms. The farms are not owned by teachers or the schools. They only serve as facilitators to the initiative, but the whole innovation at the school level is owned by the students.
Winners from Tamale Girls Senior High School, overall best SHS, and Okanta Presbyterian Basic School, overall junior high school, are excited of the new feat they have achieved.
So it has given me an entrepreneurial ideal mindset. So it's no wonder our school also won the entrepreneurial school of the year, including all the secondary schools.
We are really, really excited because this is not an easy task. It's like a national competition. So we coming all the way from Tamale and taking like the trophy, Chalet, is not an easy task.
Reporting for Joy News, my name is Clinton Yeboah.
You're watching Joy News Today. We'll be back shortly. Please stay for business.